Hello and welcome to, what is this show? Android Developers Backstage. I'm Chet Haas from the Android UI Toolkit team. And today we have...
Rom. I'm Rom LaMarchand. I come from the Android kernel team.
I wondered what you called your team. And you will notice a distinct lack of Tor today. For the second show in a row, we have no Tor. You could go ahead and attach a conspiracy theory to it if you'd like, because I think that's more fun than the fact that we just had a scheduling mishap and it's the end of the year sort of mess around the holidays. But we'll LaMarch ahead anyway. Oh, you see what I did there? We're going to talk about systemy stuff. So most of the podcasts are around APIs that developers can use to write their own applications. Occasionally, we talk to people about how stuff works on Android. And this is more one of those, right? So I think most of the stuff that you work on is not does not have surface area for the developers to interact with. Is that right?
Right. You could say that we work on plumbing. All the stuff that we work on is low level, beneath the surface of the APIs, really. So it's really how do we make sure that the hardware and the low level software interacts and makes the APIs look basically the same too.
Okay. Interesting. I tell people that my team also works on plumbing as opposed to like application level stuff. So maybe I'm like the plumbing in the house and then you're kind of the pipes coming in and out of the house.
Sure.
Sure. Different strata of plumbing. Okay. So I know there's a couple of things that, you know, users and developers certainly know the stuff that you're talking about. They just don't necessarily interact with it directly. I think one of the big things that came out in the last year was certainly the system updates, the AB updates.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool. Can you talk about like why that came about and how the system works?
Sure. So AB updates is something, it's an idea that's been around for a while on multiple devices. Chromebooks actually have had AB updates pretty much since the beginning. And the idea came about for Android because, well, there are many, many reasons. One of them is that we started pushing security updates and realized that asking everybody to lose their phone for like a half hour, 40 minutes, anytime we pushed an update was not very user-friendly. You know, it's like we try to push you more updates, but at the same time, it's like no one wants to lose their phone for half an hour, 40 minutes.
Right. So, I mean, part of that update is, I mean, you download the thing and you install the thing, but then there's also a certain amount of pre-compilation. Certainly before the end release, we were doing all the native compilation of the Dex code.
Yeah.
So we're not doing as much now, right?
Yeah. So that is not what my team does, but...
Right. But I'm just wondering, like, we did reduce the system install time as well. So there's a couple of different efforts here.
Yeah. So for, let's say, legacy devices that are on the legacy updater, they actually... the compiler team is actually looking at taking those apps and compiling them, like doing basically just-in-time compiling, and then when the device is idle, start compiling the apps.
Right.
For AB updates, we are still compiling the apps, but we do them before we notify. Basically, maybe I should back up and explain how AB updates work. The idea is instead of having one copy of the system, we have two copies. And so while you're still running on, let's say, the A slot, you're going to update the B slot. So you're going to get your update, you're going to read A, patch it, and write it to B. When we have a fully flashed B, then we can actually kick off the compiler from there and start recompiling all the apps that are already installed on device.
Okay, yeah, and we should draw a distinction between the apps that come with the system image, so like, you know, Gmail on the phone that I have or whatever, as opposed to apps that you happen to have downloaded. We're not going to be compiling those, right?
We're compiling everything.
Everything that's actually on the system we're doing. Okay.
Everything on the system and everything that's that the user installed actually gets compiled. But all of this can happen in the background because we already have the compiler for the new system is already on there, right?
Yeah.
So we can actually kick off the compiler, get it to recompile all the apps.
Okay.
And then once you're ready, we pop up the notification like, hey, you have an update.
Yeah.
You push the button, you reboot, and you're done.
Interesting. So I've noticed this a lot recently because I've been taking frequent updates on, you know, latest stuff that we're trying out, and the download, just like the pre-processing phase of the updates is huge, right? Like it downloads in, you know, a few seconds or a couple of minutes, and then it spends, you know, it's in step two and it spends potentially hours, right?
Yeah.
Because it's sort of doing this thing in the background. Whereas it used to be probably quicker because it was the only thing the phone was doing, but you had to wait for it to reboot, for it to do everything before it could get up and running, right?
Yeah. Phase two is actually the recompilation of the apps. So if you look at the system update page in settings, you can actually see like download, there's a progress bar. Then there's phase one, which is we're patching your system and writing it to the different slot.
Yeah.
And then phase two is we're recompiling all your apps. We do that at a very, very low priority to try to not have any impact on system performance or a very minimal impact on system performance. But yeah, if you actually monitor it, you can see, and that's why it takes so long, is because we actually try to lower the priority.
Right. Okay. We should make that progress bar a lot longer. Maybe we could extend that the whole page down. Because it definitely takes a while. There was one time the other day, like maybe the phone sort of went to sleep in the middle or something. Like I came back a couple hours later and it was still going. Having a good time back there. Okay. So sounds kind of tricky. Like you're, you know, swapping cars while you're driving, right?
Yeah, kind of.
Sounds like maybe things work generally, but if something goes wrong, it could go horribly, horribly wrong. So how do you prevent that?
So the nice thing about that is that because we have two copies, if ever something went wrong with the new copy, we actually have a retry mechanism and we fall back on the old copy.
Okay. So something got corrupted on the storage device or whatever, right?
Yeah.
In the boot image, then you detect that when you're rebooting and flip back?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's multiple tries usually. We try multiple times just in case something went wrong the first time around.
Yep.
But then when all else fails, then we fall back to the old image and maybe try again later.
Would you try again on the same image, or do you actually go through the whole thing and do like a fresh download?
We redo a fresh download. Yeah. We try everything.
Okay. All right. So this seems to be more important. You mentioned it in connection with security updates, which makes sense, because I think a couple of years ago, before we got into the regular security update world, users wouldn't get updates as often as we do in these halls. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they didn't necessarily care as much about the time it would take to update the system, because they're only going to do it on a major update and carriers may not push those that often, right?
Right.
But now if we're trying to get the whole world to update every, what, monthly, quarterly?
Monthly.
Then it's a little more important not to spend a couple hours doing that.
Right.
Okay. Cool. So that was a fair amount of work. Like, is this easier than it sounds? To me, it sounds like rocket science.
Especially
the risks involved in getting it to actually not brick the phone. Right.
Right. There were, so interestingly enough, we actually worked with the Chrome OS team. So we're actually using their updater called Update Engine.
Hmm.
So it was some work for them to actually make it work on Android. I came up with this, basically this HAL that allows us to abstract the functions that we need from the low level so that the framework can actually talk to the bootloader and talk to the system and make sure that everything is ready.
Yeah.
And all of that was actually fairly easy. The hardest part was really making sure that storage needs didn't increase dramatically.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what if you just run out of room the download, it's easy. You just say this didn't fit. But if you run out of room, like after you've installed a bunch of stuff and you're in the middle of the compilation and then what?
Yeah. So there are two things to storage. The first one really was like, okay, the system takes X amount of space. Now we have two system partitions, right? One that's active and one that's idle.
Mm-hmm.
We can't really take 2X. Let's say we use like 2 gigs out of 16 gig storage for a system. So now you go from from 14 gigs usable for the end user to 12 gigs. This is not acceptable.
Yeah.
So we spent a lot of time actually trying to figure out what can we do. Some of those are actually, at the factory, we actually set up, so instead of precompiling the apps on the system, at the factory, we actually use the unused partition, store the precompiled apps there, and on first boot, we actually move those apps to the user data store. The idea of that being that compiled apps take quite a bit of space, and more often than not, like let's say you have Gmail pre-compiled on your installed on your device. One of the first things that's likely to happen when you turn on your phone is you're going to get a Gmail update. And now the copy that's on your device is going to be there and still take up space in the system, but never be used because you'll be using the more recent copy that's on your user data store.
Right.
So to try to work around that, we actually moved the pre-compiled Gmail or other apps to the user data store.
Okay, so you're reducing the size of the core system image.
Right.
Okay.
We've also explored using compressed file systems for the system.
Is that just in the phase where you've got the second B update there sitting there, or all the time?
You could actually use compressed file systems all the time.
Okay.
That is not necessarily tied. We did it because we were trying to reclaim as much space as possible, but... Yeah. I know several OEMs and I know the Wear team, the watch people have actually been using compressed file systems for a while now.
Makes sense because their device is much smaller.
Right.
So everything's compressed.
Right.
On the wrist. Okay. So you said you tried that. Did you not end up using that compressed approach?
We did not use it on Pixel. And the reason being that basically the compressed file system has some very different performance characteristics. And basically you're trading I/O for CPU time. Because you read less data, but you have to spend more CPU time decompressing it.
Yeah, and the CPU is not a infrequently used resource on the device. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so I mean, basically the trade-off didn't quite work for Pixel.
Okay. So when you say we didn't use that on Pixel, are AB updates only on the Pixel so far?
That's the only device that I know has AB updates.
Okay. And this is, I assume, one of those features where this is the device that has it right now. It's a general platform thing. It's just that the things that we enabled in the platform aren't yet on other OEM devices, is that right?
Right.
Do they need to enable a new version of the HAL or something?
Yeah, so they need to write the boot control HAL that allows you to talk to the bootloader, basically pass information from the system to the bootloader. It's a fairly simple HAL.
Okay. This is the one you referred to earlier.
Right.
So you wrote this new thing so that we could do this, and now it's part of the platform that other manufacturers can use as well.
Yeah. Any OEM can actually choose to implement AB updates now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so this is like the first incarnation of it.
Right.
Right. Okay. All right. So how did you solve the size problem then? How did we get it down to as small as we needed? Was it mainly the pre-installed applications?
It was mainly the pre-installed applications. I think that saved us a lot of space. We did also, we played a lot of other tricks like reducing the size. Like turns out, the system partition is ext4, so it's a journaled file system, but since we only use it read-only, we don't really care about the journaling, so turning off the journaling features also saved some space.
Okay.
So there are a few file system tuning things that we used also. And I think we came out at about, like, we were able to fit basically two partitions in about the same amount of space as what one old partition would look like.
Right, so if you sort of squint and say it's nearly the size that it needs to be, and generally storage gets larger over time. Therefore, this is as good as it needs to be.
Right.
Yeah.
And we thought that the benefits to the end user outweighed the cons of like.
Yeah, that's the trick with the platform, is making these decisions about what's going to be best overall.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Anything else about AB updates? It's there. It works.
Yeah, it works. It was great the first time I saw it work. I was super happy. I even saw the retry mechanism work and back up to the old thing once.
Right. Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, it was one time I was like, oh, took an update that I knew was bad and I took it anyway. And then I see my phone not booting. I'm like, oh gosh. And like 5 minutes later, it rebooted into the old image. I was like, okay.
Nice.
I guess we didn't totally fail.
Nice. So actually, I'm curious about one more thing though. There is a third phase that I've noticed where, okay, couple of things. So you download this thing and then step one is it's patching the system into the other partition.
Mm-hmm.
And then step two is it's compiling all the apps. And then it says, okay, do you want to reboot? And you reboot. And for one thing, it takes longer than normal reboot. Maybe I'm imagining this. Okay, you're looking at me like I'm imagining this.
So we do one thing, and we do only one thing actually on reboot, and we just check the integrity of the system.
Okay, so maybe that's it. It's just a few seconds.
That should be like a few seconds or not even, I think.
Okay.
Because basically all we need to do is just read all the blocks, and if we find any corrupted data, then we'll reboot and try again.
Okay. And the other thing I noticed was, when I finally unlock the phone and I'm in the system and I'm using it, there's a little notification in the status bar saying something else is going on associated with the new system. So what's that?
So that is something that's always been there but didn't used to be so visible, because it would actually happen as part of the spinner wait time that you had before.
Yeah.
Where a lot of apps and I guess the framework need to update some metadata that they have on the system. And so it's actually an interesting issue. Basically, the framework keeps some metadata, and they can only move forward. So when you're done booting, there's this thing, what is it, like updates are finishing or something like that, this notification.
Yeah, I can't remember what it says, but it's along those lines.
And basically it's like the there are a bunch of scripts that are going around and like updating that metadata that the framework needs.
Okay.
So it used to happen basically when you were compiling your apps. Now, because we do all this work ahead of time, you don't really see it. And the problem is what you're updating here is user metadata. So once you start that process, basically you can't roll back to a previous version.
Okay.
So it's something that's always been there. It's just now we see it when we used to. It used to be hidden.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah, I it seemed to me like it looks like it's doing more compilation stuff, but I thought it already had when it was sort of downloading the system image. But
right.
Okay, that makes sense. All right. Cool. That's AB updates. And then what was the other big thing you were working on for? Was this for the N release, or was it specifically for, you know, Pixel releases, since that was the first incarnation?
We had a partial implementation in N, and we really, because we didn't have a launch vehicle, we really finalized it on.
You kind of need the reference device to actually make all the bits work.
Right.
Okay, so that was for AB. And then one of the other things you'd mentioned when we were talking earlier was the energy-aware scheduler.
Right. So the energy-aware scheduler is an interesting story. It's So what happens is on modern phones, the CPUs are not symmetrical. You have what we call a big-little system.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you have some cores that are very efficient, but not very good at running things fast.
Yep.
But they're very power efficient. And you have some more power-hungry cores that can run things very well and very fast, but will drain your battery extremely quickly.
And toast a marshmallow.
And
other benefits. Yeah.
Yeah. So the energy aware scheduler is something that we have been working on with ARM to basically try to figure out when is the right time to migrate a task from those small CPUs to the big CPUs. What is the, basically, any app could run on either CPU. It doesn't really matter whether it's running on a little core or on a big core. But there are some apps that you probably want to be running on the big cores, like anything that the user is going to interact with that's mm-hmm. very interactive. You probably want that stuff to run on the big core. Stuff that runs on the little core could be like background services, things like that. Or when the device is idle, but you still need to do, like, let's say, network packet processing or things like that, that can run on the little cores because it is time sensitive, but not nearly as much as the user wants a phone that's fast and responsive.
Right. Okay. So was this, same question again for this feature then, was this something that went into N, or this is in the system for the Pixel devices first?
It's neither, actually.
It's just a theoretical feature.
No, it went in Pixel, and I think Pixel was the first device to launch with it, but it's not a platform feature, it's a kernel feature.
Okay, help me understand the difference.
Sure. As part of Android, we don't ship the kernel as part of the platform. And so we maintain the Android kernels on the Android open source project repositories, but they're not officially part of the Android open source project itself.
Okay, so where do obviously we're using a kernel on the devices.
Right.
So where does that kernel come from? The chip manufacturers?
So it's a mix of Android open source project repositories, the Linux kernel mainline.
Mm-hmm.
Some stuff comes from the chip manufacturers. In case there's like an OEM, like a phone manufacturer, it would come from them too.
Okay.
And in the case of Pixel, it also comes from, we're the ones developing those kernels.
Okay.
And so we maintain that source, but the only thing we compile, we only compile the code and then put like a pre-built binary as part of the Android distribution.
Right. Okay. So you did the feature work as part of the kernel. You contributed mm-hmm. back to what, mainline Linux or just AOSP? And
so we contributed. So we maintain it in AOSP,
mm-hmm.
but we are working with the mainline kernel community to try to get it mainlined, actually.
Makes sense. It's this platform has to be one of the larger distributions of Linux on the planet, so.
It is a fairly sizable, I think, what are we, like 1.5 billion devices out there, something like that.
But who's counting?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, then, you know, the fact that, I mean, now big little CPUs have been around for a while.
Yeah.
It was, the Linux kernel was not made to actually work.
Differentiate?
Yeah, differentiate on like, basically the main assumption was that all the CPUs in your system were the same. So you could just migrate from one to the other.
Okay. So now you have a heuristic based on what?
Based on power.
For any given process, how do you know the power that it's going to need?
So the Android has this nice feature where because every app is run from Zygote and Process Manager, we actually know what the relative priority of every app is. And so we use that to inform our decision of where a specific app should be.
Okay.
Like we know which app is the foreground app, which one is the one that the user can see at any given point in time.
Interesting. So it's not the system level, it's not the kernel level priority, but it's the priority in the Android sense of foreground or background or service versus activity. Do you also have that information that you base it on?
The Java framework actually maintains that and basically tells the kernel, hey, basically adjust the priorities of all these systems and moves them to make sure that they're always at the priority. The kernel prioritizes them the way it should.
Okay. All right, so I'm still trying to figure out where this feature can be seen in the wild. So if it's contributed to source,
mm-hmm.
and then you compiled it into binary, which is just part of the distribution, where does it actually live? Where can people see this?
So we do have it on AOSP, in the AOSP common repositories, the kernel repositories. The ARM team has also been trying to push those to the Linux mainline, so they're available on the LKML.
Okay.
The Linux kernel mailing list, for those that are not familiar.
Okay, I wondered, but okay.
And so there has been discussions. My team and I recently went to the Linux Plumbers Conference,
mm-hmm.
where we actually discussed, you know, what is the work that we did and how do we get it mainlined. So there's a lot of discussion about how do we get the scheduler into the Linux kernel proper.
Okay. That certainly seems interesting and necessary for the future, but for the present, how do you get it onto devices?
Yeah, so you can actually get it from the AOSP kernel repositories. You can get the patch stock from there.
When you say you, are you talking to OEMs?
OEMs, SOC vendors.
Okay. All right. So for the devices that OEMs are shipping, they have the option of shipping this feature right now.
Yes.
You said the Pixel does not ship with it. Was that a matter of timing, like when the feature hit and when we needed to bake the kernel?
No, the Pixel did ship with it.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's just it's not part of the, if you're looking for it in the framework, you're not going to find it.
Right. It's just part of the platform image that we ship with that specific device.
Right.
Okay. You can sort of view the Pixel as it's basically another OEM that picked up this as part of its distribution.
Sure.
Right. Okay. All right. Interesting. When you were talking about scheduler before, I was thinking, energy, what was it? Energy aware scheduler. I was thinking Project Volta, and I was thinking alarms. I was thinking, scheduling processes to run being aware of energy. But no, you're actually talking about thread scheduler, process scheduler.
Right.
A deeper level of plumbing.
Before. We still interact with the Volta guys because for their modeling, they need to know which CPU have you been running on.
Yeah.
Because it makes a big difference for them, right? To figure out they can't really assume that if you're using like X amount of milliseconds on a CPU, it's always going to use the same amount of energy.
Right.
That heuristic doesn't apply anymore. So we actually need to tell them in the framework, like, hey, look, we're running on CPU, like on little CPU or on big CPU.
Okay. And that has certainly got to change over time. Like, we know what those multi-core and different size CPU systems are like today, but what's it going to be like 5 years from now, when the distinction of big versus little may not be interesting or may not be the same on those devices as it is now. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, things have been changing. Even the way big-little works, big-little has been around for like, I'd say 3 or 4 years now.
Okay.
And the way big-little works has changed over time. It used to be that each big was paired with a little.
Yeah.
And so they would try to seamlessly migrate you from that one big to that one little. And so it would appear to you as just one logical core, if you would.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the more modern designs are, you have access to everything, the bigs and the littles. So you could have like a design, let's say, with like four littles and two bigs, and you have access to all of that. And now it's up to the software, up to the kernel, really, to make the decision of where do I assign this.
Right. And is the kernel aware of how does the power of this big compared to that little? Like, is there some sort of scaling factor that you base those decisions on?
That's what EAS is about, actually.
EAS being?
The energy aware scheduler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The Linux scheduler is called the completely fair scheduler.
And so is it?
Well, it tries to, in a way it is. Basically, it tries to balance, it tries to keep the load on every CPU to be the same.
Right.
The problem being that when your cores are not the same,
Can handle more or less. Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So EAS has the information it needs. I guess my question is getting back to the, devices 5 years from now, it's not just going to be big versus little. It's going to be, well, maybe there's a medium size, or maybe that big is like far, far bigger than the bigs used to be and the little is far little. Or do you have all the right sort of power scaling information to make those decisions going forward?
As part of EAS, we have to actually define an energy model that we feed to the scheduler.
Okay.
So that the scheduler actually understands, CPU 0, let's say, is a little core and CPU 4 is a big core, and this is the difference.
Okay.
This is how they scale relative to each other.
And where does that information come from? Is that specs from the manufacturer? Do you run benchmarks on those things?
We actually measure it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Because it could also not just be like a frequency thing, but it could be different instruction sets. Like, it could be completely different architectures, and then it's kind of hard to measure that. Or is that
not? Right now, the instruction set is actually the same, but it is not inconceivable that you might think of like, ooh, maybe the little core is going to have a different instruction set than the big core. In which case, I don't even know where we would start.
Right,
it's a completely different problem at that point.
Right. This is when the hardware people and the software people stop talking the same language and everything.
Yeah.
Gets very confused. Okay. All right. Nice. So that was EAS. So that shipped. Yeah. Interesting. So you work in a world where you're decoupled from releases because you're working with the kernel itself, which is like this parallel and orthogonal thing.
Right.
Parallel and orthogonal. I didn't know that was possible.
Decoupled, but at the same time, I still need to ship on time for releases and things like that,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So your stuff went out with the Pixel. It didn't really go out with N. It kind of went out with the kernel, and it's in this device.
Right. There is stuff that we do that can actually ship with a specific release. For instance, like this year, we're looking at SD card FS,
okay.
Which is a replacement. So I don't know if you're familiar with Fuse and how we mount the user data store.
Nope.
So basically, there's this user space daemon. There's this Fuse, which is like file system user space something. Basically, it's like a file system in user space that, and we use it to do some mapping of your apps to the package names, and basically to make sure that there's like proper access restrictions so that the apps can't access the system and access metadata and things like that. The issue with that particular implementation is that the overhead of having a file system that's handled in user space is actually pretty big. So whenever you try to do a open, read, write, close operation on a file, you instead of having a single system call that actually just goes to the kernel, now you go to the kernel is like, oh, that's a fuse call, goes back into user space does its thing, then calls back into the kernel, and so you have this kind of like weird, instead of having like a single call that goes straight to the kernel and then to the hardware, you actually have to make a round trip back to user space before you go back down and down to the hardware.
Okay.
And so one thing that we've been working on actually in the AOSP repositories is this thing called SD card FS, which has been developed by some Android partners, and we've actually adapted it, made sure that it works for the whole ecosystem. And the advantage of that is that we're moving all that logic into the kernel. But this is purely a software thing, right? It's not tied to a hardware. It's not tied to a specific implementation. So we can actually do a rollout pretty much on any device out there. So I think we're actually working on getting that into the platform, not as part of a device release.
Okay. All right. So the advantage is, does this avoid the round trip then?
Yeah.
So you make the one call down and it does all the checks that it needs to down in the kernel itself.
Right.
Okay. Presumably eliminated. That looked really scary when you were sort of diagramming it in the air, because whenever I think of like calling up and back, like I know just going, you know, back and forth through JNI can be overhead. I assume the same is true once we're going, you know, down to the kernel and back.
Right. Yeah. The syscalls are actually relatively expensive.
Yeah.
And like if you have any OS experience, going to the kernel is what we call a context switch.
Mm-hmm.
And going back out of the kernel is another context switch, and so on and so forth. So once you have three context switches, right, one to go down, another one to go back to user space, then another one to go back down to the kernel, that can actually add up.
Yeah. For common operations like I/O, yeah.
Yeah, if you do a lot of small operations, it will add up. The overhead of those three calls instead of one is actually going to add up.
Okay. So you said it was SD card. Is it specific to SD card storage then? Or is that just where the name comes from?
That's where the name comes from. I think back in the day, Android storage was always on SD cards. There was no such thing as internal storage. And so the storage directory used to be called SD card, and I think the name has stuck because of that.
Okay. Okay, so we're going to be using SD card storage for internal storage. Like, this is going to become the storage mechanism whenever.
Yeah, it's called SD card FS for SD card file system.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're still calling it the SD card, even though it really is internal storage nowadays.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, just one of those linguistic things where we're stuck with old technology and our language, like, you know, recording a video, you know, you talk about getting something on tape and there's no tape.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So it's nice to know that we're creating those obsolescent things in Android.
Right.
Great. Anything else your team works on? We don't really talk about where we're going in the future, but any stuff that you shipped recently? Sounds like you've been busy over the past year.
Yeah, we've been busy. SD Card FS is definitely, I think, our next big, one of our next big things.
So you said that work is ongoing in AOSP. So you're in an interesting state where you actually work in the open so people can see this stuff right now.
Yeah.
Is it easy to, do you have any trajectory you're aiming at, any particular time frame, or is it just that work is ongoing and it'll be done when it's done?
That work is ongoing. It'll be done when it's done. We try to hit Android releases, but it's never really clear, because we're not critical path, because we're not part of the APIs and things like that, it very much is whenever we intercept the Android release, right?
Right. Okay. Well, cool. That's all I got. Anything to add? Anything profound and super wise you want to toss in right at the end?
Super wise, I don't think so. I'm not a very wise person.
Okay. Then I guess we'll call it at that. Thanks.
All right.